Beanie Wells. Oh, look like a man with a painted face and a dark heart.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful!
Oh, my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Halleck's coming in!
Oh, baby! DRC can take off the hood and drop the sickle. This one's over.
From Cardinals headquarters,
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Larry Fitzgerald. Oh, my goodness.
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
You know, gentlemen, I like to think that my sideline reporter notebook over here is a working metaphor for the Arizona Cardinals 2010. As we say welcome into Cardinals Underground, a perplexed Darren Urban, a confounded Ron Wolfley, yours truly, Paul Calvisi, but I'm running the two-man game with Jim Omohundro. I think he feels where I'm going with this. You look at my reporter's sideline notebook, and you know what? It's a little waterlogged, and it's a little crinkled, but you know what? These pages still turn fine, and within these pages, a lot of knowledge.
Soft.
This notebook has been here before, Wolf. It knows how to get it done. It'll be here at the end of the season, and it'll be better off for it because it's going to have some character to it. And I like to think that this notebook is akin to the Arizona Cardinals after going up to Fall Start Field, getting rained on. You know, it was there for the entirety of the game. You know, had some things go against it, as you can see in the first half. There's a lot of smears. The ink didn't take to the page. But in the end, there it was, and it's ready to fight again in the next week against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when I'll be on the sideline, University of Phoenix Stadium. Is anybody following me right now here in this room?
No, not really. Darren, would you like to take that?
You're making a slight jump there, but I'll be willing to work with you here, Paul.
Thank you, Darren.
Otherwise, we have to redo the whole intro, and nobody wants to do that.
That's true. There are no take twos on Cardinals Underground, azcardinals.com. We're here talking about the Cardinals being on the short end, 22-10. Wolf, is there any way you want to engage me and be a teammate whatsoever?
Did you tear five pages out of your notebook like the Arizona Cardinals gave five takeaways?
I see.
Five turnovers, actually.
Tear it out
on
accident.
Seattle Seahawks.
I thought
that is what doomed them. You can stop right there. You go on the road, especially up at Quest Field. Such a difficult place to play, as we all know. And this is what I think the Seattle Seahawks bank on. They bank on you coming into that place and making mistakes and beating yourselves. I'm not saying they're not good at home. I'm not saying they don't play well at home. They have, and they have for a long time up there at Quest Field. To me, though, overall, they bank on you making mistakes and beating yourself. That's exactly what the Arizona Cardinals did. They turned the ball over five times. You can stop the conversation right there.
And on that subject, what got me about those turnovers, and we don't need to dwell on all the details of the game, but, you know, the fumble, at least Tim Hightower's fumble, maybe got punched out, okay? And Max Hall's fumble, he got drilled when that happened. But to have basically three unforced errors, as a tennis term, the Max Hall interception was, it slipped out of his hand, but the Seahawks did nothing to force that turnover.
Right.
And the two special teams, the Seahawks did nothing to force those turnovers. That, to me, is all on the Cardinals. That's what kills. I mean, it's one thing if the defense makes a play, but come on.
I thought when you said tear pages out of my notebook, you were referring to the playbook, because Ken Wisenhunt has hinted they're going to simplify the offense, which would seem to serve the rookie quarterback Max Hall well after the Seattle outing. No?
No, I think absolutely, Paulie. I think they've got to do that. They've got to simplify it. I think during the preseason, of course, game plans were rudimentary, to say the least. And, you know, you're going to have to put a lot more in than what you have going into a preseason game. You can't simplify it that much when it comes to the passing game. But I will tell you this right here. You certainly can simplify it philosophically by putting a running back in the game and giving him the ball 20, 25 times, be it Beanie Wells or Timmy Hightower. That's how you can simplify a game plan quickly. Get in the I formation and flatten somebody's face.
What do you think Max Hall learned from that Seattle game, Darren? Is that a podcast all by itself? Or, I mean, do you think there's a single takeaway? I mean, you talked to Max Hall after the game in Seattle.
He didn't say a whole lot.
So what do you think? I mean, every rookie quarterback's going to have that game, isn't he? I mean, when they realize the NFL ain't that easy.
You'd hope it wasn't that kind of game. I mean, I think back to Matt Leinart's rookie year. who, and he had a couple of real duds. I think the Oakland game in particular, when you're playing a bad Oakland team, and Matt just couldn't do anything. That was similar. You get a little frightened. I know the weather was a factor. I know that didn't help him, but you know, with the weather, it seemed to exacerbate some of his physical shortcomings, and that gets you a little scared because you don't know how much of that can be overcome with a learning curve once you've learned things, the physical shortcomings. That being said, I think he learned, well, I think obviously the coaches learned that we want to simplify some things. I think, you know, it's very possible that they have learned, as Wolf said, that maybe we need to lean on the run a little bit more, although I was breaking down the first and second down plays. It wasn't overwhelmingly running, but I was expecting, it had a feel that the Cardinals were passing the ball a lot, and it was basically 50-50 on both first and second down in terms of play calling, running and passing. So I think Max Hall needs to, what Max Hall need, I think he learned is he learned he doesn't know as much as he doesn't know. You know what I'm saying?
He realized how much there is to know in the NFL, and he thought he was closer than he really is.
Absolutely, guys. That's it. Ding, 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 ding. Look, the great thing that Max Hall learned is this is the National Football League, and it is hard. It is so hard to be a good quarterback in the National Football League. You can have all that confidence in the world. You can have the it factor. You can have the intangibles. But it is a hard game to play, especially the quarterback position in the National Football League, unless your name is Dan Marino. This is almost a necessary evil, if you will, that most young quarterbacks have got to go through. Max Hall didn't play poorly against the New Orleans Saints, guys. He did not play poorly against the New Orleans Saints. As a matter of fact, he was part of the solution in that game, not part of the problem. This is a good reminder, a jerk-the-chain reminder for Max Hall that it's difficult to play in the National Football League. This is a hard game to play. I think it's a necessary game for any young rookie to go through, and because of that, look, I still think Max Hall is a guy. I still think he's got a special quality to him that will allow him to be successful.
Well, he is the guy. He passed the concussion test, and so he is the starter going forward on Sunday against Tampa Bay, the best team in the NFC. We'll get to that momentarily. But look, he said he played like a rookie, is what Ken Wisenhunt said after the game, and he needs to go from there.
I tweeted this during the game. I wrote about it much larger in a column right after the game, and I'm going to say it here again. This is the problem you have when you are trying to break in a rookie quarterback and yet try to compete for division title. The Cardinals play a team this week in the Buccaneers that have Josh Freeman, a young quarterback in his second year. He got to play half the season, let's say, last year, something like that. Half the season, they got to break him in. The Buccaneers stunk last year.
Yeah.
Did Josh Freeman stink at times last year? Yes, he did.
But
nobody cares because they weren't in the race. This is the problem you have. If the Cardinals had already thrown away the season and they didn't have the pieces around them anyways, this would have just been a normal bump in the road. But because you know that, let's face it, I don't disagree with Wolf. The Seahawks do what they do. They try and make you to make mistakes. You break that game down, you take out some of what the Cardinals did, and you look at the Seahawks by themselves. I don't know how you are anything but underwhelmed by what the Seahawks are.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely. No, I
That's
agree.
That's what's driving everybody crazy right now. They know that the Rams aren't good. They know the Seahawks really aren't that good. We know the 49ers are struggling. That's what's going to kill everybody right now, is because you're having to work this dichotomy of rookie quarterback growing pains against a team that, let's face it, if Kurt was here, they run away with this division.
I agree with that. That is the one thing that I noticed sitting up there in the booth at Quest Field, looking down at the field. I'm thinking to myself, I am more convinced in a loss today. I was more convinced that the Arizona Cardinals have a better team, have the best team from top to bottom.
Yes.
Their roster in the NFC West, save for one position. And it's the quarterback position.
And it's the biggest position.
Unfortunately, it is the biggest one. There's no doubt about that. But watching the Seattle Seahawks, to your point, get five turnovers, five takeaways, three of them inside the Cardinals 16-yard line. They got it on the Cardinals 16, on the 11, and on the 2-yard line. They walked out of there with 13 points. Rightfully so. You can understand that. I thought the Arizona Cardinals defense did a phenomenal job on quick change, sudden change defense, where all of a sudden you turn the ball over and that defense has got to go running right back out there thinking they've done their job. It's called sudden change. Teams track it. It's a huge part of defensive football. I think the Arizona Cardinals overall have done a decent job in sudden change. But I agree with you, D. I was amazed just watching this game. There were points in this game going into the third quarter where the Seahawks had barely over 100 yards of total offense in that game. The Cards allowed them an opening drive possession and then shut them down. This is the good news for the Arizona Cardinals. You tell me this defense is going to come around. And if you tell me the Cardinals are going to be able to continue to run the ball with the authority that they ran the ball into 8-man fronts against the Seattle Seahawks, where they gashed them for 5.7 yards per carry, this bodes well for the Cards going forward. If their defense shows up and their running game shows up, now you need a quarterback who's going to do nothing but manage the game. And that's why, to me, Max Hall is still the best option. Because D.A. is a quarterback that's going to go out there. Derek Anderson, he's not going to manage games very well. That's just me. Now, there's a big upside to Derek Anderson because he'll throw the ball down the field and he'll do it with certainty. But it's not always going to be accurate, and you may pay the price for that.
Well, and that's the formula for winning with a rookie quarterback is, you know, you got to have the defense, you got to have the running game. They did average the 5.7, you know, and although Tim Hightower had 6 carries for, 59 yards, he also had a very costly fumble. And that's maybe the holy cannoli stat from the Cardinals so far this year. It's not just Hightower. 19 times they have fumbled the ball. They've lost 11. But, you know, we saw the bookend fumbles against St. Louis. You saw a very costly fumble at Seattle. And he has lost the ball in very key moments that have cost the Cardinals a lot of momentum. And now it might cost Tim Hightower a lot more than that, Darren.
Well, we'll see, Paul. I mean, at this point, I know there's been a lot of talk about who's going to be the starting running back, whether it's Tim Hightower or Beanie Wells. Nothing's been decided yet, at least not officially, not publicly. I will say that Coach Ken Wisenhunt has now twice, when we've asked him about Hightower and the fumbling issues, made it very clear, not just Hightower, but anybody, but if you continue to have these problems, which Tim has had, you're going to have your playing time curtailed. And when you not only hear that from the coach, but you hear it twice in the same words, in fact, you have to wonder what that means going forward and whether Beanie ends up getting his first start. I mean, let's face it, Beanie is a pretty good back. Everybody wants to see maybe him in that role if that's something that might work. And it's also possible that they're looking for a spark.
The difference to me and being on the sideline, and Ken Wisenhunt has hinted at this, you know, how he brings the team alive, Beanie Wells. That's the one difference between the two running backs. I can tell you right away, the defense gets off the bench. They start getting into the game. They go from keeping their eyes up on the Jumbotron because they can't see through the mass of humanity to when Beanie's running over DBs, they're up. There is something he does to energize this team, Wolf. And having played 10 years in the NFL, I don't know, maybe you can help us out here. What do you think is that little extra that seemingly Beanie brings to this team?
Well, he's a freak. He is a freak. And everyone loves a freak show. And everyone wants to sit there and watch freaks do what it is that they do. Look, Beanie Wells is big, he's fast, he's exciting to watch, but you know what, this game is still, it's still a very tribal game. You've heard me talk about this, all right? It's a feudal game. It's a game of land acquisition, and when an offense lines up and you pound a big running back like Beanie Wells is and give him the ball and try to make a statement and say, we are going to run the ball and you've got to stop us. When you have success doing that, it energizes a football team in a way that is hard to put a finger on because, again, it speaks to the tribal side of the game. Bang the drums, here we come. The game is a game of intimidation, and there's nothing more intimidating than ramming the football down the throat of somebody else. Having said that, you talk to a lot of the players in the locker room. You grab them, you pull them aside, you talk to them. Beanie Wells gets them jacked up because of that. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, what are they? Ridiculous. 158 yards per game rushing allowed. That's ridiculous.
Wow.
Just like the Cardinals. The Cardinals' rush defense has been awful at times this year. Those are ridiculous numbers. Both these defenses have struggled to stop the run. Now you've got a team that's giving up 158 rushing yards per game. Pound the football, and you run it in between the tackles.
So if you simplify the offense, that would seem to suit the offensive line. Yep. Better, wouldn't it, Darren? I mean, that seems to play into your competitive advantage. That's what the O-line is good at, right?
I would agree with that, yes.
And I wonder, is it possible you could get a step forward with the offense, especially with the return of Steve Breston as well? You know, and early Doucette has that game under his belt, similar to what we've seen in the defense. Because hasn't the defense, you know, people, okay, wait a minute, New Orleans and then Seattle. But there's a reason. I mean, there's a correlation between Ken Whisenhunt and Billy Davis simplifying that defense and the defense responding with the last two performances they've made.
I don't think there's any question about that. And you know, we can talk about running the ball and where Max Hall is and everything, and we've talked about it, I think, on every podcast this season, and we're going to say it again here. Defensively is where this team has to hang their hat because, you know, unless Max makes that huge leap, this team needs to lean on the defense. And it has come around since the simplification. I've been impressed with that. And I think it also comes down to, and we've talked about this before too, this defense wasn't that bad. They went and had two horrible games. I think a lot of it was mental. I think they let it get away from them, and that was disappointing that they let it get away from them mentally. But I never thought this team was the kind of team that would give up 40 points a game. You know, again, I'm not expecting them to shut everybody down. And let's also be honest. They're not going to have every game where if you give the other team the ball inside the 20-yard line three times, they're going to be able to keep them out of the end zone. That's unrealistic to ask of them. You can't turn the ball over there. But I do think this defense is good enough, and it's coming around enough. And if you got guys like Alan Branch playing like they should, and we saw Calais Campbell flash a little bit, and I saw Darnell a couple times. I mean, if the playmakers start making some plays, they can do some things.
I'm not saying the defense was bad, D, but I'll tell you this right now. There were two games that they were abysmal.
Oh, yeah.
They were absolutely only played six. Yeah. There were two games they were absolutely abysmal. There were two games that they've played well. The last 2 weeks, I think they've played well. And there were two games that were okay.
Okay.
Somewhere right in the middle.
Could you say the Atlanta game, they didn't show up. Just didn't have the energy, didn't have the enthusiasm. The San Diego game, there were a lot of mental errors. Letting Antonio Gates and Evie Simon.
That's all part
guys
of it,
I talked
though,
to. Well, anyway, the reason I bring that up is guys I talked to say they've remedied that. There was confusion with the defensive schemes. And as soon as it was simplified, guys like Adrian Wilson and Darnell Dockett, they got it because they've been here. They're longtime veterans. Some of the new guys who are new to the scheme, it had moved a little too quickly for some guys who were new. I mean, remember, there's six new faces for the most part on defense. And those guys, all you need is that one little hesitation, that bit of confusion, that assignment error, and then all of a sudden things start getting sideways. That's when I talk to guys on and off the record, that's what they tell me on the defensive side of the ball. And that's no longer the case effective the New Orleans game.
Well, yeah, simplifying the defense, there's no doubt about it. I think we've already talked about that. It has impacted this team and impacted it in a positive way. And I think the same thing could most likely happen here for the offense. I think Coach Whisenhunt came out and he basically said, listen, we overestimated how quickly Max Hall was picking everything up. And yeah. Max Hall, to his credit, Max Hall is he's got a high football IQ and he was picking up the offense and it was going along very well. Again, I watched the New Orleans Saints film. He made mistakes. There's no doubt about it. But he was part of the solution. Yeah. He wasn't part of the problem in that game. That was his first start. Everyone keeps acting like Quest Field was his first start. No, it was against the New Orleans Saints, the defending Super Bowl champions, and Greg Williams. And he was part of the solution in that game. If they could get Max Hall to play like he did against the Saints for the rest of the year, and have the defense play like they're capable, and then start running the ball the way that I think this team is capable, I think the Arizona Cardinals are going to go 9-7 and win the division.
Will it be enough against the best team in the NFC? Oh, it's a daunting challenge, Darren Urban. Now, did you not, as part of the media, talk to Raheem Morris? We've yes. nicknamed him Raheem Mercury Morris, by the way, for his boastful ways and the bravado out there. But he stuck by those comments, did he not?
Yeah. He basically said, look, somebody's got to be number one in the conference at the end of the year. Why can't it be us?
So look, everybody's channeling good. Rex Ryan in the NFL right now. Is that what
why
it is?
Not?
It,
you know what? I don't want to rip him. I don't want to rip him because as a media member, if he comes out and says, "Well, we're doing the best we can," we're young. I'm yawn. So I don't want to.
He's filling your notebook. Mine's crinkled. Yours is
but,
full.
But I'll say this: look, they've won 4 out of 6 games. And the other thing he said this morning was, as we pointed out, that obviously they're statistically nowhere near where they need to be. He's like, stats are for losers. So, okay.
Stats are, is that the quote?
That's what he said. Stats are for losers.
Okay.
So, okay. And that's fine. They've won 4 out of 6, and there's no question that's a nice start. Now, you can pick at the scab and say they've gotten blown out by the two potential playoff teams they've played, and they've won 4 games against teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, and it'll be very interesting to see how they can come cross country and play here. But you know what? I think for a young team, it's about a lot of it has to be about confidence. And if you don't believe in yourselves, Josh Freeman told us this morning when we brought up the comments, he's like, well, if he thinks that means he must believe it. And it's our job as players to prove him right. So we'll see.
Or is that just a byproduct of the fact that the NFC is wide open?
Yeah, I think the NFC is wide open, but I think that window might be closing just a little bit as to just how wide open it may be. The New York Giants, the way they're playing over the last couple of weeks, I'm telling you right now, very, very impressed. They are pounding the football. They look like the New York Giants of the 2007 year when they won the Super Bowl. They are pounding the football, and they are playing great rush defense, and they are knocking your quarterback down, knocking him down at a rate where they've knocked out 5 starting quarterbacks in 7 games that they've played this year. You want to talk about stats? Stats being for losers? They're also very good indicators of how your team is playing. Now, it doesn't tell the whole story. They never will tell the whole story, and I'm talking about stats. But that stat right there tells a huge story. The New York Giants, their pass rush once again is special. They're getting to opposing quarterbacks. They're number 3 in rush defense in the National Football League. They're number 4 in rushing yards per game offensively, and now Eli Manning is operating in that beautiful three-dimensional offense that he operates so well in, and the New York Giants are playing Super Bowl caliber football. And I'll tell you, a lot of people look at them right now and say the NFC, there's not really a dominant team in the NFC. The Giants got off to a bad start. Look out for them because they're coming on big time.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go like XFL and like, you know, he hate me. I'm going to go get a black alternate jersey, and I'm going to put stats are for losers right in the nameplate line. That's what I'm going to do. How about that? I'll wear that jersey out to the game on Sunday. What do you think about that, Darren?
I think, are you going to parade past Raheem Morris? I mean, is that what you're going to do?
Okay, as a sideline guy, I'll walk right over there. I probably won't get within 20 feet of him, but that's okay.
And let me just say this, too. Look, Raheem Morris, he's the youngest coach in the National Football League.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he's 34.
He's the youngest coach in the National Football League. And he's very, very capable. He's very smart. I hear he's an excellent coach. But
they're 4-2
this.
With a team that people thought was going to be the worst in the league.
34, I realize that. Finishing up my undergrad
degree. You have to temper it. Who have they played? They played Cincinnati. They beat Cincinnati. I think we all know Cincinnati's not the team everyone thought they were going to be.
Not good.
They beat Cleveland. Okay, there's some other the Rams. They beat the Rams. It took
10 points in the last 2 minutes.
Okay, absolutely. Okay, yeah. I'm just saying. Yeah.
They were down.
You know, they haven't played a juggernaut of a schedule here, and the two teams they did play that were any good beat them soundly.
Yes.
Okay, so again, I'm just saying you have to temper it a little bit here, but I just want to say this. He's young. And when you've got a head coach that is young, you've got two things going on. Number one, emotional. Number two, probably stubborn. I think he said what he did after the game, and it was an emotional game, and I get that. He was jacked up. He was fired up, came back, won the game, closing seconds of the game, won it by a point. We're 4-2. Do you believe it? He was emotional. And then I think he probably would have taken that back.
But he didn't.
When you're young, I know that. When you're young, you also are stubborn, especially when you compete in the hyper-aggressive alpha male world of professional football. You dig your heels in and say, no, I'm a man, I said it, and I'm going to stick to it.
My theory is he's trying to fire up the fan base because they won that game in front of a half-empty building, and he's trying to tell all his fans in the Tampa area, hey, we're a good team. Come out and see us, because they're looking at every one of their home games being blacked out this year. I wonder if that's not dictated from the box office manager for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, almost trying to stir up some interest in the team. It's probably all involved in there. All right, so Clark Hagans and Dan Williams, those are the injury question marks this week going into the Tampa game. Right, Darren?
Well, and yeah, and neither one of those help you defensively. I mean, at least with Dan Williams, if he would be banged up, you'd be in a situation where, because of your depth with Brian Robinson and Gabe Watson, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. If Clark's gone for a while and it didn't look all that great when he came off the field, no. In Seattle, you know, I guess you plug in Will Davis and you're hoping some other guys, you know, can step up. I mean, is Alex Hall finally going to get a chance to be active? What do they do with O'Brien Schofield? Is he finally ready to play? You know, we all know that outside linebacker is not their most deep position. And to lose Clark, who I think has been playing pretty solid football, that's tough.
You wonder if some schemes come into play, maybe some more four down linemen, those sort of things. Maybe those come into play as well. You know.
Well, they could go ahead and take Alan Branch and put him out there at defensive end, too, in the pass rushing situation where Clark Hagans, many times in a nickel, Clark Hagans will line up there. Well, Alan Branch, you want to talk about tree man and tapping into the rage tree. Alan Branch is a stud right now. The last 2 weeks, this guy has showed up over and over and over again on film.
Thank God it's about time. Yeah.
He looks so light on his feet. I'd make him the up back. Make him your new jumbo package. Put Alan Branch in there. Give him the ball on 3rd and 1. All right, there you go. For Ron Wolfley and Darren Urban, Jim Almondra, I'm Paul Calvisi. Yet another edition of Cardinals Underground each and every week here on azcardinals.com.